This episode originally aired in September earlier this year. We dive into the colorful educational genius mind of Valarie Humphrey. Bring your imagination. Enjoy.
You are now listening to Productivity Boss Moves with Robert Price. For more, follow me on Twitter at Robert Price CO.
Welcome to Productivity Boss Moves. This is your host, Productivity Coach Robert Price, and I am here with my amazing, right? I could say it more times than that, but my amazing first guest on the podcast, had other co-hosts, but first guest. So, this is really exciting. This is a seminal, podcast moment. And this individual, let me just say this, is an educational consultant, spent over 30 years in the educational system and, just has an amazing heart for young people to see them succeed and achieve their goals, and is all around the world right now. I really can't keep up. I think where were you last? South Bend.
Yes, South Bend.
South Bend. Yeah, yeah. So I'm keeping up a little bit, you know.
Yes.
but just really taking the world by storm with her story, with her ability to connect with students. And I'm just so grateful to have her in the building. The incomparable Valarie Humphrey. What's happening? How you doing today?
I am amazing. That's why you said amazing like that?
That's why I said amazing. I knew you was coming through with that.
Yes, so, you know, for sure. Most definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, so I'm really excited about today. Because really, I believe you as the audience today, you'll get the blueprint for success in the classroom, just through this story, this amazing story that you'll hear today from someone who went from flunking out of college, to the front office, the principal, you know, of different schools, and really, changed the game based on, you know, her journey. So just really excited to get into that. But before we do, you know, we always got to take care of some important business first. We got this segment called Top Three. So,
okay. All right.
You know, just, I never hit my guests with the question is beforehand. So y'all are getting a raw live reaction,
right,
to this question.
Real raw.
Yeah. So and personally, I try my best not to answer this question at all myself, so that you can get my reaction as raw as possible. But anyways, the top three question of the day is: in elementary school, and keeping what we're talking about today, in elementary school, what were your top three school subjects?
Oh, that's not difficult. So math was my number one. Okay. And gym and math, art. Gym.
And what would you say last?
Art.
Art. Oh, yeah. Art definitely was. Yeah, that wasn't on top for me. A art teacher gave me a C one time, and I asked him why I got a C. He said, because it's an average grade. And I said, okay, yeah, I guess I was doing average work.
Wow, that's a deep way to respond to a student. Yeah.
I feel like art was biased towards the ladies in the class. Like, y'all, it seemed like really? Y'all were more naturally into the arts and crafts. I wasn't really.
Well, you know, most at a young age, guys are into sports and getting out roughhousing, so.
Yeah, and it didn't help that the gym was literally right next to the art class, so I wasn't really focused.
Oh, you wasn't on point, yeah.
No, I wasn't focused on the painting that we were doing. But let me think. My top three elementary school subjects, definitely math was number one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, that was all cool before I got into the algebra and all of the rest of stuff later on. Yeah, I wasn't feeling that. But math would definitely be number one. Phys ed, that's number two. Because I just, you know, I just always look forward to whatever sport we were playing. And then number three. Wow. You would think I came up with the question. I would have.
Right. I'm waiting. I'm like, oh, what could it be? Because you said it wasn't art. So now I'm like.
Oh, I got one for you. I got a good one. Language arts.
Wow.
Language arts. Yeah.
Not my strong suit at all. Yes. Not at
all.
Yeah,
language arts. Because I was good with the. You know, I had a great teacher where we used to do like poetry contests and like different things, and I was successful at that. So
that sounds fun and amazing to be in class with someone's doing that.
Oh yeah, he was. I don't remember his name, but he was dope. I remember he had dreads and he had a big those earrings with the when people be having the big holes in it. That's all I remember about him. But anyways,
let's go.
Let's get into what we're talking about today. We're talking about, you know, the blueprint of success in the classroom, and what better person to speak about that with than Valarie Humphrey, who has literally discovered what that blueprint is through her journey. So I read your book from Flop House to Front Office.
Thank you for that.
It was a very transparent read. You were very open and honest about things and very, you know, forthcoming with the information you shared. So I think that's how you really can impact people and reach people when you're willing to, you know, go there because, you know, people can see through when you're not being real. So thank you so much, number one, for being able to, you know, do that and having the courage to do that. But it's enough hearing from me. I want to hear from you on literally how you know, in your words, how you went from, you know, flunking out. What was your, you know, mentality there to all the way where you came to a place where you're in the front office.
Wow.
And beyond.
Amen. Yeah, really beyond.
Right.
I love, when I think about it, I always hear the song, back in the day when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
Love that.
And I always think, why? Like, why do I wish I was a kid again? Because I can think back and I remember when my educational journey started to shift. And so I was in love with my third grade teacher. She was amazing, Mrs. Biggs. She was amazing. We actually had lunch together last month.
So you remember your teacher's name. So
you know, did you used to play the game where you had to name all your teachers all the way up from kindergarten?
Oh, no, I never played.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's why I can't remember mine. Okay, got it.
We used to play the game. I was in the same school district growing up from third grade all the way up. I graduated from high school. I was in the same school district. So everybody had the same teachers almost. So middle school is when it shifted. And that's when I realized, I think middle school is when I realized I was different.
Okay.
And I'm not saying different. Like I was a typical female student, but I was plus size. So my mindset, that's when you when kids really start to compare themselves to other kids. That's when you stretch out, some are taller, some are shorter. Big time. Right. It's a big time difference. Okay. So middle school for me wasn't, you know, it wasn't that popular season, you know, but I had talent.
Got it.
So I was on the cheerleading team. I was always, you know, I knew people, I was around people, and it just seemed like I was on this journey where I started moving slower than everybody else. When I started moving slower on the journey, I noticed it in middle school, but then in high school, I really was behind on the journey. But I thought I was behind. So I mentally held myself back. And I realized that later, where I didn't put forth much of an effort because I was so busy trying to fit in. I guess that's typical in school, but I just focused on the wrong thing, and I focused on what I wasn't as opposed to what I could be or what I was. And so basically, it took me on a journey. And so graduation night, high school graduation night was when it all came to a head, and it was me sitting in the parking lot in high school and with my friends, and we was having a great time. I mean, great time. We're looking out the window, we laughing, we having a ball. Yeah. We like, man, I ain't know.
What was y'all listening to? That's what I wanted to know. When I read the book, I'm like, what was they in there doing? Like, what was the song of
but
choice?
That was it. In high school, every weekend, I could tell you, every Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon, we hung out and we rolled around wasting gas. And we listened to the Isley Brothers.
The Isley Brothers, what song? What was the main?
Any song by the Isley Brothers. Back then, Isley Brothers, not these, what they call Isley Brothers now.
Oh, not the new age Isley Brothers.
No, that's like saying the Temptations. Okay. So literally, I was sitting in the parking lot, we just chilling, and
hey,
we
son,
went.
I'm recording. And, right
oh, yeah.
Now. Okay.
Hey.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hey. All right. So we sitting in the parking lot, and next thing you know, we having fun. We jamming. People start walking in with their cap and gowns. We sitting in the parking lot, and I'm like, dang, I didn't know her mama was fat like that. Oh, grandmama ugly. We laughing. We having a ball.
Hey, I'm not going to let you be by yourself on that. Me and my cousins used to sit on our front porch, and we used to do that.
Right. So you just not realize.
That was one of the funnest things to do when you was a kid.
People watch and talk about people. So we did that, and then realized. So after everybody went in, we was like, okay, let's go. We done. And we rolled around. But it never clicked in my head like, man, they're graduating, and you're in the car with your friends. So I thought I was winning. So
let me ask you a question right there. So yeah. Did y'all go to graduation parties?
People didn't have graduation parties back then too much. You just kicked back. I graduated in 1985. People wasn't really having Trump parties and graduation parties and all of that. Unless you had a family barbecue. What we consider kicking it was riding around. We would get in the car and just ride. Like it would probably be in a 20-block radius. We didn't go far. We didn't go downtown Chicago. We just rode around. And then and we would sit on somebody's porch and just hang out and had so much fun. But I realized how much money we wasted on gas later. I was like, that's crazy. Right. But
y'all could have sat in the house and did that.
Exactly. But we just wanted to be out. We would just be hanging out.
Right.
See, it was either we'd be at my house or we'd be over my friend who we call Bub. We'd be over Bub's house sitting on the porch.
Right.
Just chilling, doing nothing.
And I read you were sneaking out.
That's the word we want to use, sneaking out. I was leaving
the
house.
The word on the street is you was sneaking out.
I was leaving the house. I was leaving the house. High school was, I had fun. And so we would literally, I would leave the house to go right around. But we would, to take the car, we would put the car in neutral.
Okay.
Because I was the only one with a car. So we put the car in neutral and push it out the driveway. My friends will push it and I'll steer it out the driveway. So we could go and go hang out. And we would just literally ride around. Like, would not do anything. We weren't bad. We would just ride around. And No right. one had a, out of my high school friends, no one was really focused on college.
Right.
And
so the people you were with, did they finish through summer school as well? Or what was their story? The people you were talking about, the, you know, people.
You know what? They were younger than me. So all of my friends, so we had a group. So we had the Mac men and the Mac girls.
Okay.
So the Mac men were the guys. It was like 5 and 5. And
okay.
The guys, all of the guys except one, I think 4 of them were younger than us. But I think everybody graduated on time but me.
Okay.
I think if I could remember.
I didn't mean to laugh like that, but
to be honest, I don't even remember.
Wow. Okay.
I don't even remember. But I
you
know.
You were just having a blast.
Oh, I was having a ball. I got good memories. I got good memories. And our theme song was That's What Friends Are For. Because we get caught in some crazy stuff. Just hanging out. When I tell you we had a ball, baby.
You're going to have to send me these songs so I could put them in the show notes for the for the people who don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
We so basically hung out. I mean, our graduation party was we went to the drive-in when I got ready to leave for school. We all went to the drive-in, and they was playing Friday the 13th. From 1 all the way, I think 5 or 6 was out by then, and they played them all. And it was in August because I was getting ready to leave for college, and we just sat there. Well, we watched them all, and we used to drink.
Okay.
And we were sitting there drinking, watching the movies, getting tipsy, drinking. I don't even know how we got home that night. That was crazy. May the Lord watch between me
right,
and thee.
Right, right, right. The hedge of protection was around.
I promise you it was.
Wow.
And we hung out, and then I left for school, and I went and found me some more winning friends. And in school, still drinking, started smoking, and I'm in college, and I wasn't getting up going to class. We would stay up all night. I didn't get up and go to class. And the people I hung out with, I didn't know they was getting up going to class and coming back home going to sleep. So by the time I wake up at 12, 1 o'clock, they sleeping, they just getting up. I didn't know they got up and went to the 8 o'clock class. So, right. I mean, it was a lesson learned, but it took me a minute to realize that I was winning and losing.
Right.
I realized that, you know, and even when I got my midterm grades, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to class, you know, I'm going to get together, but I still kept kicking it. And when you go to college, it's like, it's just like going to high school. When you first get to college, it seems so big, but you hang out with the people in your dorm. Then all of a sudden you hang out with people in other dorms. Then you get into an organization. Then it's the whole college. And then it starts going back small. And you end up being with the person that lives next door to you. By the time you graduate, by the time it's time to graduate, you studying with the person next door and you're done.
Right.
So the circle get bigger, then the circle gets smaller when you realize it don't have to be that big. The bigger your circle, the more distracted you are. So it came back in. And then it was like, wow, let's go. But realize, you know, it didn't click on until, I can't even say when it clicked on, but I know when I woke up and I realized like, wow. My first semester, my GPA was a 0.923. Mm. 0.923. Why you make that noise though?
I know your GPA could be that low, honestly. I didn't know it, but hey, look, it's a part of your story. That is fantastic.
But when you look on the back, that's what that is on my shirt.
Right. You wear it proudly, and that's phenomenal because you came through. So I'm interested to hear more about the story. So all right, you got the
So I got the 0.923.
Right.
My parents let me go back. I don't remember the conversation. I don't even remember. I think that's the season my parents were going through a divorce.
Okay.
So they really didn't pay me as much attention as they should have because I probably should have got shook really hard.
Gotcha.
But didn't get it. Didn't get that. And then I went back. And when I went back to school, I went back. I was like, I'll go to class, but I really didn't apply myself. I wasn't focused. I still wasn't fully focused. And I ended up with a 1.443.
Wow.
And I got invited to not return. But I often say that, but that's really my pretty well saying I got kicked out. But I flunked out. Like, no one kicked me. I flunked out of school. And when I had to tell my parents that, but then it was, they still were going through the divorce and still was different things, trying to sell the house and do all of that. And then it became, what are you going to do? And I was like, okay, my father's like, you don't get to just not go to school.
Right.
So right. I ended up going to school downtown Chicago. We lived in the suburb, so I had to take the train, which we call the L. So I had to take the L, and then I had to take the bus, and I had to walk a few blocks to get to school.
Wow.
And I don't know why.
So you felt that that was a lot different than
four or five colleges to get to that one. Huh?
I said that was a lot different than you being on campus.
Yeah, and I'm by myself. So I didn't have the friends. I didn't have the people. And then when you, I had been gone for a year. So coming back home was totally different because my friends, who, you know, they weren't thinking about college. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they weren't on point. So me coming back to hang out with them, and they had regular jobs.
Right.
You know, and they really were smoking and drinking and doing everything by then. And we were totally disconnected because I got the yard life and I got the yard mindset. So
let me ask you this question. So when you came back and you were attending a junior college, like, and then you reconnected with those friends who were, you know, who were still drinking and smoking and everything. Like, did you feel like, did you ever have that feeling like this, if I don't get it together, like, I'm going to be working a job, just kind of like.
No, I wanted to work a job because they was making money.
You said what now?
They was making
money. Oh, you wanted to make it. You wanted to work a job. I got you.
Because when you're young, you're looking at money. Because everybody tell you money. You're going to college to make money. But I'm looking at them making money now. And you telling me to wait 4 years to make money. So when you're in college, you like, I can make money. And then let me get a good job. You know, a good job is being a manager.
Right.
You're not thinking about a career. You're thinking about a job.
Right.
And I was trying to start a career. I realized that the path I was on, I was going the career path. I wasn't on the job path, you know. Right. So it wasn't working. It was not, and I went and I started fighting. But I didn't even go back to school to go to school. I was fighting to get back with my friends, fighting to get back to the atmosphere.
Got you.
And so, but it took me a minute to get it back together, to get back to the atmosphere that, you know, by
how
the
long
time,
did it take you? Did you go to the junior college for a year?
I was out a year.
2 years?
I was out a year.
A year. Okay.
I was out a year. So I petitioned to get back in, and they let me back in, and I was like, there won't be a problem no more.
Right.
No. So when I first went back, my mindset was to not get kicked out again, but it wasn't on the value of education. Mm-hmm. But then when you go back and you start seeing who didn't come back, you start seeing and all of this stuff. And then, so I was at my junior year. So second semester of my junior year, I had an amazing class. It was an art class.
Okay.
And that teacher was so awesome. She was so awesome.
And you love art.
I love art.
I like myself.
I love the art class. And then I had to have surgery. I had to have surgery, I can't think of it right here.
Something with glands or?
Yes. Yeah, my thyroid gland. There you go.
Look at me.
So I had to get thyroid gland removed. So I had to have surgery. So I came home. But when I went back, I think something happened over that little transition of time. Mm-hmm. When I went back to school, I was serious. And I just started, and my art teacher, she let me make up my work, and she kept me on track. And then when it came finals time, she was like, you don't have to take the final. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she was like, your A is so strong that if you got an F on the final, you still will have an A in the class.
That's the greatest feeling ever in college.
Yeah.
You get that news. You don't have to take the final. You'd be on cloud nine.
And I went and took it anyway. She was like, "Oh, you got to do it." I did. She said to get 100% in my class, you can get four right on the test. And you will have. I was like, "I'm going to do it anyway." But I'll tell you this, I can't remember her name, but I remember the experience. And throughout from then, I just started grinding. So I graduated with over 3.1. But I went from being at every party to not going to parties. College wasn't about that by the time I got to my senior year. Because then I started keeping track of my grades and keeping track of my assignments and making sure I didn't miss it and holding teachers accountable. I went for them trying to hold me accountable to me holding them accountable. Wow. And it just shifted. And then I graduated with over 3.1 and got my degree in education. And coming home after graduating, people were like, "You in education? You know, you ain't like school too much." But you're a teacher.
How does that work? Yeah.
Right. So then I started teaching in Cabrini Green in Chicago. Well, let me rewind. I apologize. I made that sound like I knew where I would be teaching. I did not. I thought I was going to be teaching up north. I thought I was going to be teaching in the Bougie.
Okay, I was about to say, for those of us who are not from Chicago, that area, what does up north mean? But you're breaking it down. Go ahead.
It's the Gold Coast. So it's right along the lakefront.
Okay.
Everything, it's the upper echelon. It is. You can get a condo where you're looking out the window and you're looking at the lake.
Got it.
Everything is beautiful on the Gold Coast.
Okay.
And I wasn't quite at the gold part of the coast. Yeah, I was in the projects, which were built literally about four blocks from the Gold Coast.
Okay.
But the way they took me, the directions that my father gave me, because how I got to this school, one of my father's friends was my godfather, who was the principal at the school.
Okay.
So he was like, "Oh, Val, I got a teaching degree. Come on, I put in, no worries." So I went. The directions they gave me, boom, boom, boom. I'm traveling the Gold Coast. I'm like, "Oh, yes. This is it, baby." Went from, "Oh, yes," to, "Oh, no, wait a minute." And I'm looking around, and I'm like, "This is not what I know."
And not what you pictured.
Not the Gold Coast. Mm. No. And I had never been in the projects before. I was raised in the suburbs. Raised with my mother and my father. I was in the two-parent household.
So let me ask you this question then. What was the first indicator that you knew, wow, I'm in the projects? Like, what?
I really didn't know I was in the projects. I just knew I'm looking up in this gate. So it's an apartment building that has, not balconies, but ramps on the outside where you should be able to lean over, look over, but they got gates.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't, and I'm like, why they got gates? And why are their windows broken out? Why do you know? It was just all of this. And I'm looking, and I found out I was in the projects of Chicago. And then I found out I was in Cabrini Green. Then I found out the reason they got gates because they throw people over.
Right.
And, you know, and I, you know, I'm like in the middle. So the school sits in the middle, and the buildings are all around. So it was a whole nother lifestyle. The project.
Meanwhile, I spent some time in the projects, and I never realized that they have the gate. You just helped me understand that, because I was just used to gates being there. Like, oh, okay, this is just part of the projects. But thank you for letting me know why they had it there. So
yeah, and then it was just crazy. Wow. And then so the projects that I was in, the bricks on the building were white, were like an ivory color, so they called it the whites. And then across the street down some, those bricks were red. And I'm sure the construction folks was just doing one, you know, this is cream color buildings. And those, we use red bricks, but it was called the reds and the whites. And if you lived in the reds, you didn't come in the whites. If you lived in the whites, you didn't go in the reds.
Wow. Okay.
And after my first year, I was teacher of the year at my school. And I love what I did. I loved it. When I tell you I loved it, I love Cabrini Green every day I was there. And I love the students. And I connected with my students. It was just so amazing.
So when did you first know that you loved it? Like what was that moment? Because I know you were saying that you walked in and it just it really wasn't what you expected.
So let me say this. I fell in love with where I was the day I walked inside. Okay. Because the inside of the school did not represent what the outside looked like.
Okay.
They had mosaics. They had art. They had the school was beautiful on the inside. Not the tile, not the stuff that was in the school, but the way they displayed the artwork and the love. I'm envisioning it right now. I can still see myself walking in this building.
I can see it,
And it was just amazing.
Okay.
And you could see the love. You could feel the love and the energy in the building. And there was an amazing principal, Miss Fitzpatrick. And it was just, it was an awesome place to be. And after being there for, you know, I stayed there 8 years.
Okay.
But, I mean, so much happened in 8 years. I, like, you going, the first time, the Bulls won the championship. And everybody in Chicago was talking, it was all across the news, the media, the looting, and everybody, if you don't know what looting is, they just breaking in places, taking stuff. So when I got to work that Monday, I used to love microwave popcorn. I had a microwave and I had a refrigerator in my classroom. So when I got in my class that day, I had cases of microwave popcorn. I was like, where we? And they was like, oh, we was looting, Miss. So y'all looting and bringing it to me?
Wow. They brought it right to you.
Brought it right to me. And it was like in their mind, it was like, I'm taking this for my teacher.
Right.
It was just, it was crazy. So I could feel that's their level of love, you know, and different things like that. Like I got to work one day and the police was at the school. I'm like, what's going on? They shot up the windows in the school. They just, that was their weekend thing. Either they would throw rocks, but we had plexiglass windows. So you would have to shoot it. Like, rocks ain't gonna break it. Because they broke all the glass out at one point. So now they were shooting, they were sitting up there just playing all weekend, shooting the windows out. So the other teacher's mad at me. And I'm like, hey, what? I didn't realize that everybody window got shot out but mine. So it would be stuff like that that happened. I would be like, y'all crazy. They was like, nah, they told us we couldn't shoot your windows out. They could shoot everybody else's windows but yours. I was like, y'all just something else. But the scariest moment of my life, but the deepest one, I was leaving an event. I used to go see them after school. They was at the Park District performing and doing stuff. So I would hang out at the Park District. And I'm there, and I'm getting ready to leave. And I'm, you know, I was like, I'm walking out. I'm just having a good time. And all of a sudden, I just... And I'm like, why are they popping firecrackers? This is crazy. And I'm walking, and then one of the kids jump on me. And I'm like, get off me. I don't play like that. Why would you grab me? No, everybody else can play like that. I don't play like that. I'm just going off.
Right.
And they was like, you ain't see that? You ain't hear that? I was like, I heard the fireworks. They was like, that made fireworks, them gunshots.
Right.
I was like, wait, what? I'm liquid now.
It was fire. It wasn't fireworks.
Right. So I thought the sparks, and when I looked back out the window, it was like I was walking in front of the guy, and he and the guy up on the ramp are exchanging gunfire. And the kid jumped on me and drug me back in the building to stop me from being shot.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. That right there, that touched my heart. Because in that moment, it wasn't even about where I was in that moment. It was about, wow, this kid just risked their life for me. Because that kid could have got shot.
Right, right.
But in that moment, he took that upon himself. So I was like, so with things like that that let me know things happen that, like, man, they love you.
Right.
They truly love you. And it was nothing like teaching in Chicago. I loved teaching in Chicago. I loved it. The only thing that got me to move was I wanted to buy property, but I didn't want to live in Chicago, and I wanted to buy a condo or a house.
Okay.
And I found one in the suburbs, so I had to move, and that was the reason I left. But I ended up going back.
Is that where you live now?
Oh no.
Or, no, you moved.
I live okay. I live an hour from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not near Chicago. So then after we did that, so literally I was walking into, I was helping my mother move into her school. And the principal was someone I used to know. I used to work with him. And he was like, hold on. He was like, I need a math teacher. I was like, y'all not gonna pay me what I make. He was like, you working? I was like, I work in Chicago.
Right.
He was like, I need a math teacher. And it was like a mafia deal. We literally wrote it on paper, slid it across the desk. He wrote something, slid it back. We going back and forth. I'm crossing out like, yeah. So we did a little mafia deal on paper.
And look at that. I always wanted to do that.
He said, I could do it if you teach summer school. I teach summer school. Didn't matter. You know, summer school wasn't much. It kept me doing something anyway. So
right. That's
how I ended up in the suburbs. And then just kept going. And when I was at that school, that's when I'm there. And then it started, girls start hanging out in my room. It went from 2 to like 50. And we started a club, and it went from me feeding them to like, okay, y'all got to bring $2. I'm not feeding all y'all. So then I started doing lessons with the girls. And then in 1999, one of the girls said, hey, Ms. Humphrey, my church is having a conference, a women's conference, but they can't get anybody to do the youth, the young ladies. Would you do it? I was like, yeah. And so while speaking at the conference, within about 2 to 3 hours, girls were like just at crying, laying on me at my feet, crying, shivering, telling me all the things that had ever happened to them and how they don't love themselves and they have been molested and how they struggling with life. And it was kind of like, it kind of freaked me out because I never had anybody do that. I know kids are drawn to me. And that's when I realized I had a gift. I had an anointing to speak. And that was the first time I ever spoke. And then those girls grew up and went to college. And then they were like, hey, can you come speak at my college? Can you come speak at my organization? Then as I talked to children, they grew up. I mentored them through middle school, high school. They started bringing me out, and it just kept growing. And my godson, Christian, and his girlfriend at the time, Jasmine, she became, AKA, he was a Sigma, and they asked me to speak for their organizations. Then other organizations asked me to speak, and it just kept multiplying.
Wow.
Multiplying. Yeah. And then when they left and they went to organizations, in the work world.
Right, right.
I started speaking in the work world. I started speaking there. Wow,
and that's powerful.
And they become educators, and now I come to their schools and speak.
Yeah. That's powerful because it's like you took these young people who had nothing to give you at the time and poured into them where they were, and then they, matriculated to adults and to the various schools and positions they have, and now they're pouring back into you by, pulling you these different places. So that's powerful. And I think that's, that's a great perspective for people to hear and see because, there's different people, that we're around and stuff that, maybe trying to speak and do different things, but it's like, now you don't know the level of, pouring in that took place prior to getting to this point. So that's very impactful. Just you sharing that.
And that move. So the crazy thing from that, so I'm traveling. I'm not really traveling. I'm local within 30 minutes to an hour from my house, and I'm steady speaking. And that was in 1999. And meantime, I become, you know, a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. And so I'm doing that. I'm running the female mentoring program for my chapter. And then I was sitting at a sorority meeting, and one of my sorority sisters, who's an accountant, she said, you need to start a foundation. And I was like, girl, I ain't got, come on, nah. But I'm working with girls and they being drawn to me. So right. my line name from being a part of the sorority, my sorority name was Pied Piper, because kids always following me.
Oh, wow.
So I became the Pied Piper. And then we're sitting in the sorority meeting, and next thing I know, she was like, she was asking me information. I'm giving it to her. She literally applied for my foundation. I never did. She did that. And I actually started a foundation in 2012. And so I have my girls' foundation, True Eagle Beauty, that I do. And people pour into that and donate to that all the time. So those young people are now grown. They're financially pouring back into my foundation. And it was just crazy. So that was growing. And then in 2017 was when I was like, you know what? I wanna declare myself as a professional speaker. I wanna do this. So that's when I joined Eric Thomas's Game Changer speaking program.
Got it.
And
got
my it. Life turned around. And because when I got in the program, I had been speaking for 18 years.
Right.
And they were like, oh, you got footage? I was like, I've never recorded myself speaking. But I never recorded myself because it wasn't about me speaking. It was about the people, the children.
Right.
So I never did it. And they was like, who speaks for 18 years and never record themselves?
It don't got nothing. Don't got nothing to show for it.
Nothing. I didn't even have a list of places I had spoken. I had nothing. When I tell you I had nothing. Because then it wasn't about that.
Right. It wasn't about that. Right.
It wasn't about that. So I just, the journey just kind of shifted. I knew, so now I pour into, so when I travel the country and I speak now, so it's twofold. I speak for myself as a business now because I retired July 15th and 2019. Whoop, whoop. So when I retired to go travel the country and speak. And then that's when being a part of the speaking program, I went through that. I became a coach. So they hired me on as a coach. And then when I retired, Eric Thomas was like, oh, wait, hold on. You're retired now? You've been in education over 29 years. I want you on my squad. So that's when I got pulled in that for him, and I still speak for myself. So I get to travel the country in two ways. So that was on my vision board, too, to be stretched and to travel the country. So I'm doing those things.
Wow. That's amazing.
That is good.
That's amazing. And it's powerful because I just want to go back to that moment when you're sitting in the car and you're laughing at the folks who are walking out and they're graduating. They got their cap and gown and you're so far from that. And yet you went from that to where you are now. And that is just, I know there's no way you could imagine yourself being where you are now at that moment.
I tell you something that I've heard for a very long time. That's crazy. I was never satisfied with where I was. And people always said little things like you always, you think you're better than us. But it wasn't that I thought I was better than them. I thought there was something better for me. So I kept trying to stretch the group. I kept trying to stretch people to do more. And that's what basically was starting to happen. I kept trying to stretch people. We could be doing this. We could be doing that. We could be doing this. And I kept trying to stretch my group and pull them to a new level. But they were content and I wasn't. And that's how I find myself always trying to level up, level up. So it was good.
This is supposed to be the blueprint for success. right? In the classroom. So if I'm a student who started out, I'm unfocused, I'm all over the place, and I'm kind of already, you know, kind of got my papers back and they're not looking good. And I need to transition to, you know, overcoming and becoming successful, in school. What are some of those things that I need to do? Tangible steps that I need to follow?
Basically, I mean, if I had to give the blueprint, it would be the first thing is to listen. And I think when you're young, you think that everybody else is wrong. They're not right, you know, and nobody can give you advice. So sometimes you just have to get the advice and begin to apply it and learn how to discern between advice and control. And when you start listening, like, the listening thing is the biggest thing for me. That's like number one, is to listen and act. You got to listen and act and change, you know, change your direction, because I think had I done a vision board when I was younger, or I had reverse engineered, like, I want to be this, how do you become that? And I walked through that thing with an adult or a mentor, I think I would have gotten on track faster.
Got it.
So get a mentor. So listen, get a mentor, listen, and act.
Got it. And I know you mentioned something throughout the book that you talked about how when you got back to campus that second time, you moved to the other side of campus.
Oh, I moved to the choir floor, 24-hour choir floor.
Right. Now, was that strategic or was that? Okay. All right. So, and why did you do that? Why?
I had one friend, Keon Dixon, who was amazing, but we both were at college. And so out of the group that we hung out with, we were the last two there. And we both needed to focus. And we wanted to stay next door to each other. But then we wanted to be where it wasn't freshmen and it wasn't all the hype. And there was a dorm, Olson. There was a dorm called Olson Hall, but it was technically the floors, the upper floors was a hotel. And the lower floors was a dorm, but it was only two floors. So, but they only let seniors stay over there who was serious. So we moved over there, and it was 24-hour quiet. But we did it in the mindset of, we got to handle our business to get out of here. And you got to focus, man. Staying focused, and that's where that vision board comes in. If you know what you want, then that's what you go get. But if I go to the grocery store and I don't even know what I want, I start picking up everything. But if I write down a grocery list, I might get two or three things off the list, but I know my main things. So if I do a vision board, I know what I want. It's not just saying, oh, I want all A's. No. Okay, if you want all A's, how you going to get there? Then you got to get a strategic map. So if I say I want tacos, I got to break down the ingredients.
That's great. That's great stuff. And you brought out something that I feel is important, because I, you know, one of the things I wish would have been done when I was in school, or even now, is just like, we kind of start out with, what do you want to be, versus what you were talking about, really, what do you want? You know, because if you can line up what you want, then how you get there, that's just par for the course. Like, you figure that out in the process. But because sometimes people choose a major or go after a certain thing that doesn't necessarily line up with what they truly want.
Right.
So I think that's major. That's a key factor. Now, you talk about this story of accountability. In the book. Don't worry, I'll remind you. I'm like, if people ask me stuff in my book, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I did. Okay, I did say that.
Right.
But no. But the young girl who you talked to her about the goal. I thought that this was powerful, this illustration. You told her what her goal was.
Oh yeah, I still do that to this day.
Yeah,
I did it in South Bend.
Yeah, yeah. Can you share that with the listeners?
So basically, traditionally the way I do it, I call a student out of the audience and I tell them, your goal is to get to the door. Your goal is to get to the door, and they go, okay, to get to the door, and then I asked the audience, what's her goal? And they said, to get to the door. I asked the staff, what's her goal? To get to the door. And then I asked her again, what's your goal? She says, to get to the door. And then I said, okay. So I just start talking to her. Hey, so I start talking about school because we're in a school setting. So I start with, who'd you have first period? And she's telling me, I was like, oh, okay, what year are you? How many siblings do you have? So the questions get more and more watered down and further mm-hmm. from being important right. or having value. I get to the point of, what's your birthday? Like, what made you wear those shoes today? And I'm asking colors, and I just ask crazy questions towards the end. But what happens in the midst of these questions, the kids are like getting frustrated in the audience, and so are the adults. Why are you not walking to the door? She should be going to the door. Some people start laughing. Some people say nothing. They just like, wow. And then you get some people literally get angry, like, walk to the door. So what happens is that at some point, either the person hears what people are saying and they take off and run to the door, or they get frustrated, like, man, you distracted me. So that's the thing. The point of the exercise is to understand how distractions are pleasurable. You can't distract me if I don't like it. But distractions are pleasurable, and I'm asking questions about you. So you're going to sit there and have a conversation with me. And at the same time, people in your life, some people are going to get angry because you said you wanted to do something and you're not doing it. Some people are going to look at you and laugh. Some people are not going to even say a word. They're just going to watch you fail.
Right.
So, and then I'm a very illustrative speaker, and I mm-hmm. love taking the kids on a journey where they have aha moments. When they have aha moments, they remember that. But had I just told them distractions are this and you can be distracted, they don't remember that.
Right.
But they'll remember that. I remember standing there and that lady asked me all those questions and I had a goal. So anytime somebody bring up the word goal, they're going to realize, oh yeah, I got to stay focused. So you stay focused on the goal. And then they was like, but you didn't tell me to walk to the door. Nobody going to tell you to go after your goal. You set the goal, you got to go after it. So everybody, and it never fails. You get some, even if the person doesn't move and the audience doesn't say anything, I still can bring it in because I'll ask them, why didn't you walk? Well, you didn't tell me to walk. Well, who's going to tell you that you got to go to, who's going to tell you what to do, exactly what to do on your journey? You set a goal. When you get to college, nobody was like ringing my phone. Did you go to class today? You know you got to go to class in order to graduate. After a while, the pushing going to stop. People going to stop and see what you're going to do.
Right.
So, yeah, that's one of the coolest things. I love doing it. And you should have seen E.T. when he saw me do it. He was like, oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
That's different.
Yeah, so it was good stuff. But it works with elementary kids as well as high school kids.
Yeah, I love the illustrations. And so one last illustration that I want you to pull out from the book is this thing about relationships, because you were talking about your journey, and I got you. I'm going to bring it to you.
Come on, I'm listening.
I'm like, every time when people say, you read that, you made it seem like it was so deep. And I was just like, I was just talking about it. But you're talking about relationships from this standpoint. You're talking about the eagle. And I think this is significant to wrap it up, just given your foundation is called True Eagle Beauty. And you were talking about how the female eagle, you know, she does this thing where she, you know, she drops the twig. So can you talk about that? But just because I feel like that's so significant in regards to, you know, relationships, like a lot of times that's the biggest distraction, right?
That
can derail you the quickest when you get tied to a person or get tied to people that totally take you out. So I just thought that this was powerful. So can you talk about that?
You want the quick, like, do you want me to just tell you, or you want me to tell the story?
Give it to me. Give it to me how you want to.
All right, cool. So basically, when a female eagle and a male eagle meet, and before they mate, she takes them through a test. And she picks up a twig and she flies as high as 61 football fields, which is like 18,600 and some feet. But at the time, she's taking this twig up and he's following. And she drops the twig and she looks at him and catch the twig. He's like, okay. And she says, before it hits the ground. So he has to go get the twig and bring it back. And she keeps doing it, but she keeps soaring higher and higher and keeps dropping the twig. And he has to go catch the twig and bring it back. And she does this for 2 hours. Now, if he lets the twig hit the ground, she will not mate with him. She like, deuces, kick rocks, be on your way. If he continues to catch the twig, after 2 hours, then she'll mate with him. Now, when I tell this story in front of people, when I say that 2 hour mark, everybody's like, what? 2 hours? The guys right. are like, yeah, okay.
I'm out.
So, right. And the girls are like, dang, 2 hours. But so, and we parenthetically pause, which is verbal parentheses, and we move forward to the point where they mate and they have baby eaglets. And when they have the baby eaglets and it's time to teach the baby eaglets how to fly, literally, mama eagle, she pushes the baby eaglet out the nest. And daddy eagle has to go catch the eaglet before it hits the ground and take it back to the nest. And it takes about 2 hours to teach a baby eaglet how to soar. Somebody in the audience goes, oh, but you have to remember back. She tested him with a twig for 2 hours. She knew she wasn't going to be a single mom. She knew he wasn't going to be a dad, be dad. She wasn't raising her kids by herself because she knew he would catch a twig that had no value for 2 hours, that now he has to catch his baby. For 2 hours, she knew he would do that because she tested him with a twig. And we have to shift that because that twig we're not going to have eaglets. We don't have to teach them how to soar, but that twig that we drop can be the person that you're dating saying, I'm going to pick you up, and they don't show up for an hour. They can be, it could be, I'm going to be there at 3. And they, you know, they show up later, or they always late. Or they say, I'm going to call you back, and they never call you back. Or they're cheating on you. They're if a person let the twig hit the ground, if an eagle will cut off another eagle because he let the twig hit the ground, why do we? And God made us in the image of him. So why do we not cut people off? Or, you know, when they don't do right, when they let the twig hit the ground. And if God gave that much sense to a bird, how do we not test before we trust? And my godson tells me all the time, you cut people off too fast. They let the twig hit the ground.
Right.
You know, so it's amazing to watch people's reaction when you tell that story because it's an amazing story. It's amazing.
Right.
And there's multiple, I think it's like 20-some or 50-some types of eagle, but it's that one eagle out there that does this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I had to have you share that. I said, oh, no, she got to talk about this.
Yeah, that just grabbed you, though. But when I tell it and I'm so animated, it really is like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I'm moving, and they're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I love it, though. But I think about that. That helped me mature as a woman. I was a grown woman, but when I learned that story, an eagle, a bird, and a twig.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, I love the color. I love everything you brought to the audience. And I think you guys can see, like, Valari is just forward thinking in terms of the color and the illustrations and the, you know, just everything that's involved in truly making a phenomenal educational experience for a student. It can't just be the bland, you know, black and white stuff. You really have to, you know, just go beyond our traditional kind of ways of doing it to really reach them. because she's certainly doing an excellent job at that. So before I wrap it up, really quickly, where can the people find you online? Where can they book you as a speaker or connect with you? Where can they go for that?
Everything can be found on my website, which is valariehumphrey.com, which is valariehumphrey.com. And all of my books are sold on Amazon. So my first book is From Flunk Out to Front Office. And that story came out of me because my mentor, Eric Thomas, told me to free myself and stop hiding the fact that I was a flunk out. And it's now on the front cover of a book, and I'm able to travel the country and talk about it. My second book is it's called WOW, Words of Wisdom. So it's words of wisdom for our little sister. So it's just a compilation of advice for young girls on self. And self is self-image, education, love, and family. And you get advice from a multitude of people. The youngest person giving advice is 19. The oldest person is 100. And the crazy thing, the 19-year-old had a lot to say. And the 100-year-old was just, so I'll show him, but the 100-year-old page was like that right there. The 19-year-old had two or three pages, and the 100-year-old had a half a page and gave advice on everything. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Just real efficient with it. Look, she 100. Look, she's this done. Is what it is.
Exactly. I love it. And my last book is for educators, and it's Don't Let Them Flunk Out. Connection is Greater Than Correction. And it's 50 ways to get and stay connected to your students.
Oh, I love it.
And my journey right now is traveling the country and working with educators who teach students that don't look like them. And that's in skin tone as well as socioeconomic status. And sometimes that can be difficult because you said your expectations are watered down or lifted up because of the socioeconomic status sometimes. And because of skin tone, you water it down. So my journey is to level the playing fields on that.
Love it.
And there's a booking tab on my website if you want to book me to come out to your school and work with your educators. Click booking and my assistant will get back to you within 24 hours.
Let's get it. I love it. I love it. All right. So every week on the podcast, we have a boss move of the week. So I'm going to share what the boss move is from what you have broken down. You've given us a lot to chew on. I believe this is one you're going to have to go back and listen to grab the gold that was in here. But really, I think a huge theme that I heard from the very beginning, from when you were sitting in the car laughing at the folks as they were coming out of graduation, to the end with the story with the eagle and the twig, there was this strong component of relationships and who you surround yourself with throughout your journey in order to be successful. So so here's the boss move of the week. I want you to write out your top five standards for people you'll be in relationship with. This could be friendships, romantic relationships, whatever it is, but it's your top five standards for people you'll be in a relationship with. It's one of the things that helped me select the right person to be married to, because as many people know, you know, that can truly that could truly derail your whole life, who you end up being connected to. And many people don't even think about, what are my standards? So let's start there. Writing out, what are your top five standards for people you'll be in relationship with? Remember, it's not enough to dream. You must do something about it. I'm Robert Price, your productivity coach, helping you focus on what matters most. Everyone, have a productive week.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Productivity Boss Moves. If you have any questions, topic suggestions, or just want to say hello, follow me on Twitter at RobertPriceCO. If you haven't done so already, please take a minute and leave a quick rating and review of this show on Apple Podcasts. It will help me to keep delivering life-changing information for you every week.